Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. Glad to be with you. This is the show where we take more in-depth looks at things that you may have heard about as of late here on WSJM News. We have longer conversations with the folks who are in the know or who are making things happen here in Michigan's great Southwest or in our fair state of Michigan. This is, of course, the Monday edition of the show. And this is the last few days have brought us the sort of weather that remind us why we have a drain commission. It's been raining pretty heavily outside. So that's lovely. A great way to start out the week. And I hope you had a great weekend, despite the rain. I had a fairly decent weekend myself. Took a little trip. I actually went to Cleveland and saw the B-52s live in concert. That was fun. It was a shortish show, but certainly worthwhile. A lot of fun to do something like that. And coming up on today's show, we have several guests to speak with. First of all, we'll check in with the Michigan League for Public Policy. This is a think tank in Lansing. It's sort of on the progressive side of things. They recently issued a report on the current state budget, which took effect earlier this month. And the Michigan League for Public Policy says that the state budget does not properly meet the needs of minority residents of the state. So we'll learn more about that coming up on today's show. Also, we'll chat with Kinexus. Kinexus, they remain committed to Van Buren County. Now, as you know, the Palisades plant was slated to close next year. Now, a recent decision from the Michigan Public Service Commission changed that. The plant will stay open for a few more years. And so I caught up with Kinexus to find out what that could mean for workers in Van Buren County and the Covert area, the 600 or so people who work at the Palisades plant. Basically, this delay is a good thing, but we'll hear more about that from Kinexus coming up on today's show. We'll also check in with the Michigan Secretary of State's office to learn its position on driver responsibility fees. There has been an effort to do away with these fees in the state legislature, although it appears to have hit a snag. But Secretary of State Ruth Johnson has weighed in on this, and we'll check in with a spokesperson coming up on today's show to get the SOS's take on driver responsibility fees. We'll also chat a little bit about the state police director. She's been under some fire recently over a Facebook. It wasn't really a post from her. She shared a Facebook post from someone else that upset some people. So we will learn about that coming up on today's show. The latest there, what the governor has to say, what some protesters have to say, etc., etc. And if you would like to weigh in on something that we discuss here on Our Take, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's O-U-R-T-A-K-E at WSJM.com. Right now, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll chat with the Michigan League for Public Policy about the state budget. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. For this segment of the show, I thought I'd catch up with the Michigan League for Public Policy. They recently issued a report on the latest state budget. The new state budget, it took effect at the start of this month. And so the League for Public Policy, which is sort of a more liberal sort of organization, they took a look at the budget and they said, you know, it's not necessarily a bad budget, but it fails to improve the education available to many low-income children. It doesn't serve minorities properly here in the fair state of Michigan. So I chatted with the League's Pat Sorensen. She's a policy analyst, to learn more about their take on the state budget. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Pat. So the Michigan League for Public Policy, you've taken a look at the state budget. It took effect at the start of this month. Tell us, in a nutshell, what your analysis of the budget found.
Well, we found that across the board that there, despite several important investments in the 2018 state budget, that when you dig a little deeper, you find that if you take what is essentially a colorblind approach to state budgets and policies, that there is the possibility of perpetuating what are already pervasive inequities for the state's children of color.
And so what you're looking at here is the programs in place here in the state of Michigan for individuals who are economically disadvantaged?
That's right. And certainly there differences in economic opportunity are at the heart of racial and ethnic disparities in outcomes for kids. And I think the bottom line is that the rising economy that we've heard a lot about has not lifted all boats. And what we find when we look at the Kids Count data is that more than half of the state's African-American children live in families where no parent has full-time employment, along with about 4 out of every 10 Latino children. So children in color overall are 2 or 3 times more likely to live in poverty. So that's one of the reasons you can see disproportionate impact on children of color.
All right, so what sort of things should the state budget be doing to help low-income individuals improve their situation?
Well, we've identified a number of things, and there were some things that were positive in this budget. They did increase, to some extent, eligibility and access to child care, which is very important for low-wage workers because of the high cost of child care. And there was an increase in food assistance, which is very important as well. But we've identified some areas, you know, despite having access to health insurance, many children of color and low-income children face health troubles getting access to health care for a variety of reasons, including transportation to care, and the fact that many health care providers are not willing to accept payments from the state, and there's difficulty accessing care overall. So as a result, you see that, for instance, pregnant women of color are much less likely to have access to prenatal care, and that affects their children, who are often born too early and too small.
Okay, and how about the state budget when it comes to education in low-income areas?
Yes, we think that we have to continue to invest in programs that are targeted to public schools that are in communities with high poverty rates. That's a really important approach, and there was an increase that the governor supported and legislature supported for the state's at-risk program that does just that, although it's still not fully funded, so we would like to see that fully funded. And we also believe that we have to invest more early. So it's not enough to have a pre-K program when you're 4 years old and be ready for school and to catch up by the time the third grade reading tests kick in. And as you know, Michigan now has a potential mandatory retention law for kids who aren't reading proficiently in third grade. And we have to start before that, when children are born, because there's lots of research that shows that learning potential really develops in the first 3 years of life. So we need high-quality child care, and we need early intervention programs.
Okay. All right, we're talking with the Michigan League for Public Policy's Pat Sorensen. They recently analyzed the new state budget, which took effect earlier this month, to see how it will impact individuals of low-income backgrounds. Around the state of Michigan, Pat, what other categories did you examine here?
Yeah, we looked at outcomes for children in terms of economic security. We also looked specifically at health and whether or not children were covered by Medicaid or My Child, and as well as access to prenatal care, and the issue of environmental health, and certainly that came to the forefront nationally with the crisis in Flint around lead exposure. So we looked at those issues as well. We looked at support to communities and families, particularly the protective services system, and the number of children who are in foster care. And finally, we looked at the educational system beginning very early, so really a cradle-to-career kind of approach, and going all the way through the ability to finish a post-secondary program.
All right, now a lot of the things you've mentioned are related to children. Would you say that most of what the League for Public Policy believes the state budget ought to be doing concerns children?
There are services for adults that are also needed, but if we really want to sort of turn the tide for, particularly for children of color in Michigan, we're going to have to start early, and so that's why we're focusing on the early years. That is how we're going to begin to overcome some of the long-term discrimination that has put children in a difficult position.
Hmm. And you have mentioned a few positive things about the state budget. I mean, do you think it's at least a good start?
Yeah, I do think it's a good start. And I think that what we've really found is that state budgets and policies that are colorblind can perpetuate pervasive and unacceptable outcomes for the state's children of color, even if they were well-intentioned. So what we find is that good intentions has not always resulted in good results, and so we believe that the improved access to childcare and also some of the food assistance improvements in this budget, but because we're seeing such negative outcomes for children of color in this state, we can see that we have to go.
All right, that was Pat Sorensen with the Michigan League for Public Policy. She got cut off there at the very end, but she said there's still a long way to go. And she was talking with us about the state budget, which is currently in place. It took effect earlier this month. The Michigan League for Public Policy took a look at it to see how it would affect low-income residents and minorities around the state. They say it doesn't do enough to help out the folks who need the help the most. And their report is up at their website, mlpp.org. mlpp.org. I appreciate Pat's time there. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. Right now, I wanted to remind you about something happening this week. If you happen to live in Edwardsburg, or if you go to Edwardsburg on a regular basis, you may want to be aware. There is a project that's being planned for US 12 in the community of Edwardsburg. It's going to take place next year. Michigan Department of Transportation is going to be doing some repaving on US 12 right through town. That'll affect everyone who drives around in the Edwardsburg area. So this week, they're going to have a town hall. It's actually this Wednesday. It's an open house, a town hall, whatever you want to call it. It's a meeting at the Ontwa Township Hall this Wednesday, starting at 4 p.m., ending at 6 p.m. A Michigan Department of Transportation spokesperson Nick Sharippa told us they're going to discuss exactly what they're planning for US 12 in Edwardsburg.
We're going to come in next year, 2018, and repave US 12 through Edwardsburg, and that includes some sidewalk ramp upgrades, some drainage improvements, and rebuilding the Canadian Railroad crossing there in Edwardsburg.
So they're rebuilding the railroad crossing, doing some other work over there. It'll affect people who drive through Edwardsburg. They will have a town hall slash open house this week to tell people all about what's going on. And we spoke with MDOT spokesperson Nick Sharippa all about this. He told us the public and business owners alike will be impacted.
Because it's kind of a residential slash business area, it's not, you know, between towns, it's actually in a town. We wanted to let folks in Edwardsburg know what was coming before it got there. Just give them a chance to kind of see the plans and see what we were doing, and maybe let us know if they had any concerns and see if we could address them.
So heads up, there is this MDOT project plan for US 12 in Edwardsburg for next year. They are meeting this Wednesday from 4 to 6 at Ontwa Township Hall to tell everyone about exactly what they're doing. MDOT engineers and planners will be there. They're going to be repaving at US 12, reconstructing the Canadian National Railroad crossing on US 12. So that's something they'll be doing next year. And they want folks to be aware. Nick actually told us it was township officials who asked MDOT to hold a meeting, I guess, so the township officials don't have to deal with a bunch of angry residents next year calling the township hall saying, what's going on here? So they're going to have that meeting this Wednesday from 4 to 6 p.m. at Ontwa Township Hall. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. This is Our Take. We're going to take a quick break right now. When we come back, we will chat with Kinexus. That's right. Kinexus. They're an organization based in Benton Harbor that helps people find jobs, helps connect people with job skills, training, et cetera, et cetera. They're an employment agency, sort of. And recently it was announced that the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant up in Van Buren County will stay open through 2022. It was supposed to close next about a year from now, actually, but an MPSC decision changed that. And so now Palisades will stay open through 2022. I caught up with Kinexus to find out what this means for local workers. Basically, it's a good thing. But we'll hear more about that coming up on the next segment. And if you'd like to weigh in on something we discuss here on the show, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake@wsjm.com. Stick around and we will be right back. News Talk 94.9, WSJM. This is Our Take. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. I'm pleased to be with you here for this Monday edition of the show. I hope you are surviving the rain out there. Right now, for this segment of the show, I thought we would chat with Kinexus. Yes, Kinexus. Recently, it was announced the Palisades Nuclear Power Plant in Covert will stay open through 2022. It was supposed to close next year, but the MPSC, the Michigan Public Service Commission, they stepped in, made a decision that sort of screwed up that deal for Consumers Energy and Entergy. So Palisades will stay open for another few years. I caught up with Conexus to see what they thought about this. I chatted with Conexus Economic Development Consultant Zachary Morris about Palisades. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Zach. Now, recently it was announced Palisades will be closing next year. That, of course, has since changed. But I know Conexus has been working with county officials in Van Buren County to prepare for this. So just to start off, tell us what sort of things Conexus has been doing to ensure those workers are helped.
Yeah, what we've been doing is assisting Entergy. Entergy formed an employee resource group to support their employees through this transition period this last year. And what we've been doing is coming on site and helping the employee resource group with career planning and their preparation needs.
Okay. And so have you been working directly like with Palisades employees at this point?
Yeah, with, you know, particularly with their employees that lead the employee resource group and their human resources leadership.
So what sorts of challenges have these workers been facing for the past year or so since the announcement the plant was closing?
With any plant closure, uncertainty is always the biggest one that faces most employees. And so we tried to be supportive of those Entergy employees, just helping them figure out, okay, you know, what are those next steps? You know, what are you wanting to do? You know, what are the options you have coming up? And again, it goes back to just helping them with career planning and helping them figure out, you know, how to prepare for that next step in their career.
Okay, and as we know, the Palisades closing has been delayed. So what does that mean for Conexus?
Well, that's a good thing for us in order to be better prepared for the inevitable closure of the plant. So the extra time extends our ability to help the community prepare for that. It gives us time to really thoughtfully plan through how to mitigate the impact of the closure and begin implementing strategies to lessen its impact in the long run. So if anything, it just gives us more time to be thoughtful about how we want to approach that inevitable closure.
Mm. All right, so as you've worked with the Palisades plant in the past year, has it been difficult for them to retain people since announcing that the plant was going to close next year? I mean, it seems to me if people know they'll be out of a job soon, they'll start looking for one.
You know, it's hard. I don't have the numbers there from the human resources folks to say, you know, whether or not they've had an increase in turnover the last 12 months or not. I mean, anytime there's uncertainty, that's always going to lead to more turnover in any organization, regardless of what the situation is. But staying open now that they've announced they're staying open through spring of 2022, this is certainly going to help their ability to retain some of their key people, for sure.
Now, when Palisades does close, I mean, if you think about the workers there, these are people who work at a nuclear power plant. They tend to be pretty skilled, highly qualified individuals. I don't imagine many of them will necessarily have that much trouble finding new work.
Well, exactly. These are some of the best and brightest people in the world, right? They're very smart. They're very sharp. You want the best and the brightest working in nuclear plants. So you're right. I mean, general job training isn't as necessary as what we've been able to do with their employee resource group, which is helping them with career planning, helping them with preparing for that next step in their career. You know, some of these folks haven't interviewed or prepared a resume in over 20 years, so just helping them with those little things, you might say a light touch, makes a big deal. You know, some other things we're doing, Andrew, though, in terms of supporting the employees, and I'll say even the community, is that we've talked about how we want to form a joint adjustment committee. And the joint adjustment committee is made up of the employees and the community both. And that joint adjustment committee will help the employees, but it'll also help the community, because one of the things we want to point out, it's not just the employees going to be impacted by any plant closure. It's going to be the community as a whole. It's going to be that the employees who work up at this diner, and it's going to be the other folks who support the plant and maybe a contractor role. So what we're doing with just supporting the plant and the communities through forming a joint adjustment committee at some point, looking at applying for an Economic Development Administration grant, and then just looking other ways to support the company, employees, and the community.
So the bottom line is this recent announcement about Palisades staying open for an extra few years. This gives Conexus more time to work with the county, to work with the school district, the township, and, of course, management at Palisades.
That's exactly right. You know, this just buys us time to really get down to business over the next 3.5 years. Well, it's really 4.5 years, but the next 3.5 years is what we bought was another 3.5 years, right, with this announcement. So allows us in the community to be able to do some economic studies, develop a plan from those studies, and begin implementing those plans and have them in place by time the plant closes, potentially. We don't know if it's going to close in 2022, but if it does, we'll be better prepared because we have an additional 3.5 years to prepare for it.
All right, we're talking with Zachary Morris from Kinexus about the Palisades closure in 2022. Anything else you want to add, Zach?
You know, I think that's basically everything we want to communicate. We are going to continue to work with the plant and how we develop strategies to help not only employees but the community. We are working with Van Buren County. As you mentioned, John Falls, a big piece of that as county administrator, the commissioners also, and the Economic Development Corporation of Van Buren County. And certainly those local units of government are going to play a key role in this too.
Okay, that was Zachary Morris with Kinexus in Benton Harbor. He is their economic development consultant. He works with Van Buren County a lot. And Kinexus has been working with the county as the closure date of Palisades loomed. And then, of course, it was announced recently the plant's actually going to stay open through 2022 instead of closing next year. That's good news for Kinexus. It's good news for the employees, for the community, et cetera, et cetera. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You are listening to Our Take right now. I thought I would check in on the director of Michigan State Police, Colonel Christy Kibbe Echu. She has been under fire recently because not too long ago on Facebook, she shared a post made by somebody else. She didn't make this post, but she shared a post from somebody else that insulted NFL players who refused to stand and instead kneel during the national anthem. This has been a big controversy lately. And so there have been calls for the director of the state police, Colonel Echu's firing since that happened. Facebook post that she shared called those NFL players, quote, anti-American degenerates because they chose to kneel during the national anthem. And, well, Echu apologized for it later. And now she's been given a 5-day suspension of pay from Governor Rick Snyder. Now, Snyder, everyone was telling Snyder to fire Echu. He said, no, I won't fire her. But instead, he announced last week she's going to have to work for 5 days without being paid.
What she said wasn't appropriate. There's an issue with civility and relations in many different ways, and so I came out with a number of recommendations that we should be looking at statewide across all state employees.
And the governor continued.
NFL owners, NFL players, this is coming up with our elected officials across the country. There's more that we need to be done to understand one another, and I think we can take a number of steps to make sure Michigan's a leader in better understanding and better relationships.
So that's Governor Rick Snyder caving into pressure there to penalize the Michigan State Police Director. He says she'll continue to report for work, but she's not going to be paid for 5 days.
I think we took the appropriate measures. I appreciate the Colonel's been an outstanding servant for the state for many years with the Michigan State Police and a good leader. She made a mistake. She apologized for it. Use this as a learning experience, and let's move forward.
So Governor Rick Snyder thinks that's the best way to approach this, give her a suspension over there. Now, meanwhile, that's not satisfying the people who've been calling for her firing, her removal from office. State Representative Leslie Dove, who is a Democrat out of Detroit, says they have delivered 85,000 petition signatures to the governor's office calling for Colonel Echu's removal.
Everyone's looking at Michigan. And here we are, we're trying to get Amazon to move into Detroit, to move their headquarters into Michigan. And that doesn't look good, to have the director of our Michigan State Police have those kind of sentiments. What are we saying to the world?
State Representative Leslie Love there from Detroit continued.
But also we are looking at the systematic changes. What are you going to do now as far as the state police department to right the wrongs and the biases that you have existing in your department?
So Representative Love there not satisfied with the governor's decision to not pay Colonel Christy Kibbe Echu for 5 days because she shared a Facebook post made by someone else. She says, frankly, the director of the state police needs to be removed.
Progress Michigan and Color of Change submitted petitions this morning and talked about how for the next 14 months, the Michigan State Police and particularly Colonel Echu better cross her T's and dot her I's because they will be watching and paying attention and holding people's feet to the fire on this.
All righty. So that's the controversy that's been going on involving the state police director. And we'll see if this dies down at some point or if, you know, these protests will continue. So do you think the state police director's sharing of a Facebook post made by someone else should result in her firing? If you have thoughts on that, send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. O-U-R-T-A-K-E at wsjm.com. Right now, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk driver responsibility fees with the Michigan Secretary of State's office. Stick around. We'll be right back. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. You're listening to Our Take. Thanks for tuning in. I am the host today. My name is Andrew Green. We are close to wrapping up this Monday edition of the show. So far on today's show, we chatted with the Michigan League for Public Policy about the current state budget. The league there is not totally pleased with the budget. We spoke with policy analyst Pat Sorensen, who told us the new state budget, which took effect earlier this month, doesn't do enough to help out low-income residents, especially children. And so we heard about that on today's show. Also today, we chatted with Conexus about the closure of the Palisades nuclear power plant up in Van Buren County. This plant was going to be closed next year, but then earlier this month, it was announced that actually it's going to stay open through 2022. And that's because of a decision from the Michigan Public Service Commission. So Conexus was glad to hear about that. It gives them more time to prepare for this closure to help out various entities in Van Buren County that will be affected. We also heard about the controversy surrounding our state police director about this Facebook post that she shared because of those NFL protests and et cetera, et cetera. You know, it's more drama. Right now, to wrap up today's show, I thought we would talk about driver responsibility fees. This is a thing that's been happening in the state legislature. In the state house, there's been a plan to eliminate driver responsibility fees. These are penalties that are assessed to individuals who are convicted of drunk driving or driving without insurance. And these fees are pretty expensive, and essentially all they do is result in poor people being unable to drive, at least drive legally. So there's this effort in the state house to get rid of them. State House Speaker Tom Leonard has been leading the charge. He says these driver responsibility fees, which were put in place in 2003 to plug a budget hole, were a mistake.
These were just unjust fees that never should have been placed upon our people. They never should have been burdened with these things. And, you know, as I said before, this was a huge burden, particularly on the working poor.
So State House Speaker Tom Leonard there is backing this legislation that would totally forgive the debt, which is owed by about 300,000 people. Collectively, it adds up to something like $600 million.
We've got over 300,000 people that cannot lawfully obtain a driver's license. I personally witnessed this and saw this with hundreds of these individuals when I was a prosecutor in Genesee County. And I believe we need to forgive these fees, get these individuals their driver's licenses back, and get them back in the workforce.
State House Speaker Tom Leonard there wants to get rid of all these fees. The state Senate, however, passed a version of the bill last week forgiving all the fees that are at least 6 years old. So the state Senate is being less lenient about this. House Speaker Tom Leonard wants to see these fees be totally forgiven.
I truly believe once you get these individuals back in the workforce, once they can go and properly obtain a driver's license, I think this is going to be an economic development tool for our state. And I think you're actually going to see more money come into the coffers once these individuals can obtain a job.
So there's a little bit of a disagreement there between the state House and state Senate about this. The important thing is that poor people be smacked around as much as possible. We know that's what the result will be anyway. But another entity that wants to get rid of driver responsibility fees is the Michigan Secretary of State's office. Secretary of State Ruth Johnson has testified that she thinks these fees ought to be forgiven and simply regarded as uncollectible because, in fact, that's what they are. And so I caught up with Secretary of State spokesperson Fred Woodhams to hear more about this. Let's hear that conversation now. All right, Fred, tell us a little more about what these driver responsibility fees are exactly.
Sure. Driver responsibility fees were created in 2003. They're in addition to the normal traffic tickets and fines that people get. So one of the fees that used to exist is if somebody didn't have proof of insurance with them, they would get a $150 ticket that would be over 2 years, so $300 total. These were fines in addition to the normal traffic tickets that people get. If you had a certain number of points, seven or more, you would start incurring driver responsibility fees. They were initially sold to the public as a way to They were sold as a way to improve traffic safety. Secretary of State Ruth Johnson voted against them when she was in the House. She thought it was just too much of a money grab by the state. The state was in some dire financial straits at that time. So she has opposed them and has worked to repeal them ever since. Since she became secretary, they've eliminated the lower-level most common driver responsibility fees. There was a community service option created in 2015 just for that year for people who owed some driver responsibility fees, and the state began phasing them out.
Many Michigan residents owe a great deal of debt to the fees. If you haven't paid your fee, you lose your driver's license. So there's been legislation introduced in the House that would address this.
So Secretary of State Ruth Johnson, is against these fees.
Yeah, she voted against them in 2003 when she was in the state house. She's opposed them ever since. And so we're very pleased that the legislature is addressing driver responsibility fees in finding ways to put hardworking Michigan residents back on the road. These are otherwise law-abiding people. One difference between driver responsibility fees and your standard traffic ticket is that judges couldn't waive them or provide a community service option for people. So for some low-income individuals, the fees did become insurmountable, and they lost their license. In some parts of the state, it's become a workforce talent problem because businesses aren't able to find qualified workers who have a driver's license. So certainly good that the economy is coming back, but the driver responsibility fees is hampering some job creation because you have otherwise law-abiding, hardworking folks unable to get their license back due to the amount of money they owe on these driver responsibility fees.
All right, that was Fred Woodhams, spokesperson for Michigan Secretary of State Ruth Johnson. She is among the voices that wants to get rid of these driver responsibility fees. There's a bit of a disagreement in the State House, between the State House and the State Senate about this. We'll see if they figure that out. They'll come up with something, but probably not a total forgiveness of the more than $600 million owed by more than 300,000 Michigan residents. News Talk 94.9 WSJM. That does it for today's edition of Our Take. I have been your host today. My name is Andrew Green. It's been my pleasure to be with you. Coming up on tomorrow's show, we will chat with Benton Harbor Mayor Marcus Muhammad. That's right. We are going to learn more about this income tax proposal that's going to be on the ballot next month in the city of Benton Harbor. Residents are being asked to approve a small income tax for those who live and or work in the city. This has been a subject of controversy around here. So we're going to chat with the mayor, find out why he thinks this income tax proposal is a good idea, and that'll be on tomorrow's show. And then coming up later on in the week, we'll chat with a representative of an organization that's been formed to oppose this income tax to find out why they're against it. So that's coming up on tomorrow's show. We'll also hear from Congressman Fred Upton tomorrow. And if you'd like to weigh in on something that we have discussed here on The Hour Take, just send us an email. The address is ourtake@wsjm.com. That's ourtake at wsjm.com. I've been your host today. My name is Andrew Green. Thanks for tuning in. And as always, I hope you have a fantastic rest of your day.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay!
We are excited to announce something new to the very popular app Town Crier Wire. Introducing Video Newswire. Now, not only can you read local stories that matter to you, you can now watch the top stories happening in Southwest Michigan. Our team of reporters hit the streets with video recording equipment, so when the big news happens, they are there to ask the questions and video record the events and upload them to the app. Then you can watch and see it for yourself.
Oh, yay! Oh, yay! Oh, yay!
Video Newswire is a tab you'll find on the home screen inside the app. Click the tab and you'll see all of the video news stories available for you to watch at your convenience. This is unique to Southwest Michigan. There is nothing else like it. If you don't have the app yet, go to your mobile download store, type in Town Crier Wire, and press install. It's that easy. And again, it's free.
Oh yay! Oh yay! Oh yay! There's a new way to read and see your local news today. Just pick up your phone or your tablet too. Go to your store. It's easy to do.
Town Crier Wire?
Town Crier Wire.
Town Crier Wire.
911, operator 901. Where's the emergency?
127, Vermeer.
Okay, what's going on there?
I'd like to order a pizza for delivery.
Ma'am, you've reached 911. This is an emergency line.
Large with half pepperoni, half mushroom.
You know you've called 911. This is an emergency line.
Do you know how long it'll be?
Okay, ma'am. Is everything okay over there? Do you have an emergency or not?
Yes.
And you're unable to talk because...
Right, right.
Is there someone in the room with you? Just say yes or no.
Yes.
Okay, it looks like I have an officer about a mile from your location. Are there any weapons in your house?
No.
Can you stay on the phone with me?
No. See you soon. Thank you.
It's time to say no more. Go to nomore.org. This message provided by the National Network to End Domestic Violence.